back before knowing if there was a university slot, so.
Terrific.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a fun time.
Yeah, it was a good deal. Do I wear this or not?
You can leave it right there and it should be fine.
Good.
Makes it easier. I'm going to hit play, and there's just a couple of housekeeping items that I need to take care of, and then we'll get started. It is May 27th. The name of the narrator is former Anchorage Mayor Jack Roderick, author, friend of Senator Ted Stevens. The interviewers are Charles Fidullo and Paul McCarthy. The place of the interview is Captain Cook Hotel in Anchorage. This is side one, tape one, Ted Stevens' oral history with Jack Roderick. Thanks. I guess let's start with some simple things. How did you know Senator Stevens? How did you meet him?
I was introduced to Ted by Bob Kedrick, who was the editor of the Anchorage Times. I had just graduated from law school at the University of Washington in 1960, I guess. And Ted had just come back from Washington, where he was solicitor of the Interior Department, and after Jack Kennedy beat Dick Nixon, Ted decided to come back to Anchorage. So Bob Kedrick had us into his office and said, "You two guys are going to practice law. Why don't you do it together?" I guess we must have said, "Why not?"
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
What kind of a law firm did you set up?
Well, it wasn't a partnership, as I recall. It was an association. We borrowed some money from the SBA and set up our office over on E Street and 5th, I guess, in the back of that. Ted had one office. I had another. And Dick Fisher, who was the real estate appraiser, I guess, one of the first in Anchorage, he rented an office from us, and Barbara was our mutual secretary, and that was it.
Wow. What kind of a relationship did you have with Senator Stevens before the meeting, or was that when you met him, and how did it develop?
Well, of course, we practiced law together. And we lived a few blocks from each other. I lived on 10th and P Street, and he was at 12th and P Street. Our kids were about the same age. Martha, my wife, and Ann, Ted's first wife, were very close. And very close, terrific. I mean, Ann, as everyone says, was a remarkable woman. And she was, and so was my wife. So, and our kids sort of grew up together. So that was it.
What kind of a... People talk about Ted Stevens' intellect and his work ethic. What was he like to work with?
Ted was a terrific lawyer. He accepted conflict. He kind of liked it, I think. The more you pour on him, the better he likes it, you know. And that gets, for me at least, the amateur psychologist, I guess. Ted is a survivor. He came out of a broken family, raised by, I think the divorce was when he was about 4 years old in Indianapolis, raised by grandparents. Grandmother was a Christian Scientist. Grandfather was active. He called him a joiner. Very active in the Republican Party. Father went somewhere back in Texas and had lost his eyesight for a while. Remarried. Ted had two brothers and sister. The young brother and the sister went with the mother. Ted's father left. So he was raised by grandparents. And when his grandparents died, then he moved to Manhattan Beach, California, and was raised by uncle and aunt. I think his mother's sister, I forget. At any rate, the uncle, who Ted says had the most influence on him, was a motorcycle driver in World War I.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then, a kid, of course, Ted went to high school and went to China and flew and then came back and went through a couple of colleges and ended up going to Harvard Law School, I think sponsored by a fellow named Green, I can't remember his first name, down in Los Angeles, who owned a offshore drilling company. Ted had gone to school with his son, I think, and I talked to his son one time. And he borrowed $5,000 from his uncle and went to Harvard Law School. Couldn't pay the $5,000 back to his uncle, but Ann and Ted bought this uncle a car one time, and Ted said he drove that until he died. So they repaid him that way. But after Harvard Law School, he went to work for a law firm in Washington, D.C. They sent him to Fairbanks. I think his client was Usabelli.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so he got a flavor of Fairbanks. Went back to Fairbanks. I'm a little vague there. But became the prosecutor, you know, with the gun on his hip and all that jazz.
Elliot Ness.
Yeah, that everybody talks about. And then I think he told me, the Secretary of the Interior was a fellow named McKay from Oregon. And I think he said that there was a manager of the lodge now at the Denali that had screwed up, and he had violated the contract, and the secretary said, well, let's do something about it. So Ted goes down to talk to this guy, and he says, you better get out of here or you're in trouble. And the guy says, okay. So he left. So Ted goes back to Fairbanks and says to the secretary, it's taken care of, Mr. Secretary. And I think the secretary said, let's get this guy back to Washington. Which they did. And then he stayed there. He got the flavor of politics in Washington and liked it. And, of course, stayed and became, you know, very close to Fred Seaton, who was also a newspaper man, Bill Snedden in Fairbanks, very close. Ted was right in the middle of it. He did the Anwar thing, you know, set that aside. Incidentally, he claims, I've got it somewhere in my records, that the women's club in Fairbanks was the one that put that in their head. We know the oil company, this is true, I've got it somewhere. We know oil is going to be explored up there, but you guys now set aside part of that north slope so that it remain the flora and the fauna will be undisturbed. And they just chose, I think, mainly the northeast corner. And that's what Ted said. I got it somewhere in my records.
Wow.
And they set that aside partly for that reason. The Fairbanks Women's Garden Club, or whatever it's called. I'm getting a little off my story here, aren't I?
What was your relationship with him through those years? How many years did the law firm last? How did you keep in touch with him as he did these tracks around Fairbanks and in Alaska and in Washington?
Well, our partnership, so to speak, didn't last very long because I was also had businesses. I think I told you earlier I'd started a Alaska Scouting Service, Petroleum Publications, Alaska Map Service, and I'd had this Shell landman leave Shell and join me as my partner. So that was going along. Charlie was running those things. I was practicing law. Charlie was also a Yale graduate and also a lawyer, but he hadn't passed the Alaska bar, and the theory was that he was going to pass the bar and join us, although I don't recall talking to Ted about that, but the idea was he would join our law firm. And suddenly, Charlie died. age about 35, I think. And so here I was practicing law and all these businesses, so I had to decide, and I went off and ran the businesses. So I left Ted somewhere in the probably late 62, early 63. So we were together only a couple of years. But I kept touch with him. And he then went through a series of other lawyers. Martha and Ann and the kids stayed close. But I don't know. I was so damn busy.
Yeah.
I can't remember, but we kept touch.
Well, what did you think of him personally, professionally?
Well, Ted is a fighter. He's a battler. The more you put on him, the harder he fights. And he just built that way. I look back on his childhood now. My conclusion is that he was angry. Most kids are when their families split up and he gets tossed around. But no, he was a good lawyer. The thing I remember about Ted, he could come back and draft a memo orally, just dictate a memo and hardly change a few words. Now, I couldn't do that, but most people can. So he had a sharp mind. He liked the law. He worked like hell. And not to get ahead of the game, but he's basically honest because he never sought personal wealth. So I'm, is that answering your question?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that, talk a little bit about what, when in his conversations with you, he goes through these series of events. He runs for Senate, loses twice. He, in between, runs for State House. And it looks like he's getting out of politics. It seems as though he has said, I'm not going to engage in politics. He's helped fight the statehood battle. He's influenced Eisenhower. He's Seton. And Seton, he's gotten Eisenhower to support statehood. We become a state. But then it looks as though he's getting out of politics. And Senator passes away, and he's called back from Mexico. I mean, did you talk to him about that? Any ideas what was going through his mind at that time?
I'm a very strong Democrat. I was chairman of the Democratic Party here in the state in the late 80s. We didn't talk politics. We agreed that the two-party system was the way to go, and both parties should be strong. And that's as far as what I got. Now, I've lost track of your question.
Just what do you think he expected that to happen?
No, no. Ted loved politics. He loved it. He's one of the only guys, or not only, few guys I know that simply enjoyed 100% what he was doing. And it was politics. He loved it. So, no, he never thought of going out of politics. He came back here. He ran for office. He went to Juneau. He was a good, effective politician down there. He carried Wally Hickel's water. he loved it. When he was defeated by Elmer Rasmussen in the 68 Republican primary, incidentally, I was in India at the time, but we got back just after that election when he was defeated, and he was at the bottom. He was the lowest that a guy could be.
Huh.
His life, I think as he saw it, was sort of over. But it wasn't voluntary. It was just the way it was. And just a little diversion, when I came back, he was at the bottom. And he suggested that we buy a computer company out here on Fifth Avenue, one of his clients, I think. So we went out there and looked at it. So we were going to be going to business in this computer company. People say, well, he was going to back to Washington. I don't think so. I think Ted just like I say, he was absolutely at the bottom, emotionally and otherwise. So no, I don't think he ever considered getting out of politics. That was his life. He loved it. And he was good at it. And but, you know, he lost in the primary. Whoa. And as you probably, when you interviewed Hickel, you know, Nixon asked Hickel, you have the guts to appoint this kid instead of Elmer? And Nixon said, yeah. I mean, Hickel said yes, which was probably the smartest thing he did.
Mm-hmm. Now, talk to me. I mean, obviously it turns out to be a very wise choice, but did Senator Stevens expect to be called into that meeting and expect to be put into that mix by Wally Hickel? And do you think he was ever expected to be named senator?
Well, I have no idea. I knew Carl Brady, of course. And, you know, Ted was the politician. He was the strategist. He was good at what he did. Carl was not that type at all. He was a friend of Hickel's and a nice fella, but he wasn't effective as Ted was in politics, and Wally must have sensed that, and as I'm sure you know, Carl finally said, yeah, Wally, you know, do the smart thing. Appoint a good politician, and that's what Hickel did. But no, I don't think, no, politics was Ted's life, and it has been. He likes, I could always, a little personal here, but the thing I liked about Ted, no matter what was happening until the last couple of years, I could always find that twinkle in his eye. He was doing what he liked to do.
I'm going to go a little bit off of chronology, and I'm just going to ask you, what happened in the last couple of years? I mean, why did he lose that twinkle?
Well, he got, what do you call it? Well, he relied on a guy he shouldn't have relied on. Somehow he made a terrible mistake relying on Bill Allen. He should have known better. And you know, I think he must have thought Bill Allen was treating him fairly, and it turned out, of course, he wasn't. Ted got sloppy. What do they call it? Entitlement mentality. You know, after a while, you're in office, you let down your guard because everybody's coming at you, you know, saying you're the greatest. Pretty soon you believe it, and now you're in trouble. So, no, Bill Allen was, what do you say about him? A very successful businessman. Everybody touted him as the leading businessman in the state. You know, after a while, you believe it. But the oil industry financed him. They made him. And so, you know, he just assumed that messing around in politics was an extension of business. You know, and Ted should have known better. But he didn't.
We can come back to that in a little bit. How did he, you know, you saw him on a personal level. Do you, I mean, just as somebody who understands politics, how effective was Ted Stevens as a legislator? And you've talked a little bit about it in Juneau and in D.C.
Well, I don't know much about Juneau, although when he was appointed, I know he got a couple calls from the Republican friends, can't remember their names, in Juneau. I happened to be in the office at the time, and he was very close to those guys. He was just an effective legislator. And, of course, in Congress, as you know, his only friend, he said it's hard to have friends in Congress. He had one, Inouye, Daniel Inouye, he called his brother, and you'll get that story, and it's a good story, of course. But it's, you know, both of them trying to get money for their constituencies to catch up with the rest of the U.S. I mean, that rationale was obvious. We got to have more money, and it'll it'll make us like the other guys. We'll catch up. I guess I've lost track of your question again.
Just how effective was he as a legislator? I mean, it seems that he... One thing we talked, one other interview, somebody said, senators, the people who live in state sort of decide what their expectations are of the senator. And because Alaska was such a young state, in many ways, Ted Stevens sort of created the vision of what a senator should be for the state, and that was appropriations.
Yes.
I mean, was that enough? Was he effective at crafting that role and... You say catching up, catching the state up to the rest of the nation.
Well, I don't have the figures in front of me, but I think it's true. I think we got per capita more than any other state probably in the nation. Maybe Hawaii beat us, but I don't think so. You know, the small population, he got, I don't know how many billion dollars. But, well, I remember one time we were playing tennis and afterwards, he said, you know, I forget the details, but, you know, God, I'm going to get $2 billion from this for this state, you know. So, sure, it was money. That's what Alaska needed, he thought, which I guess is the core of politics. He got more than our share. Sure, that's the way people recall him. And in that sense, he was very effective.
Talk to me about the temper. Everybody talks about Ted Stevens' temper. Some people say that he controlled it and used it to his advantage. Some people say that it harmed him. Well, what do you think about the temper? Did it help him? Did it hurt him? You know, the whole thing with the Hulk tie.
I don't know whether it helped him or hurt him with his fellow legislators. I have no reading. But I know it, again, based on his childhood... He was angry. You have to be in that, I think, in that background. But and incidentally, I have never seen Ted lose his temper.
Really?
No, it's kind of strange. It's strange. I know I've talked to Michael Carey and others that have seen that. I have never, and it's kind of interesting, I guess. But... Yeah, I understand. It was real, and I think it was real. I think he probably used it to his advantage, my guess is. You know, the Hulk thing, yeah, people were cautious with him. Hey, I heard, and I can't prove this, that when he first went back to Washington, Anne, his wife, bought him a couple of books on how do you keep your temper. And it made sense. And knowing Ted, he probably read them and he learned something that, you know, there's a way to control that damn thing. And but whether it made him a more effective legislator, I don't know.
But you never saw it. I mean, you're friends with him and you've never seen him. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, it is, I guess. No, I never have. No, I've never been in a situation where I was, you know, asking for something. Or our joke was, I never asked him for anything, and he would come back at me and say, "Yeah, well, one time now when you were mayor, you came back, and he did set up a meeting with the Secretary of Transportation for me." And we were talking about a commuter rail from the valley down here, even there, 35 years ago. And Ted said, "Well, I got $25 million for you." I said, "I never asked for it. I don't know what you were doing." But no, I never did. But I never was in that situation where, you know, I was saying something and he was saying, "You're full of it."
Well, I mean, you were his law partner, though. For even though it was only a few years, but still, that says you were working in these. It just is an interesting point. And I'm gonna move on. And the question I want: how did he change over the years? So you knew him as part of the law firm in the late 50s, early 60s, right. and then you know, he moves on, becomes a senator, moves around. Did you see any changes in Ted Stevens over the years, over the time he becomes a U.S. Senator and then moves on appropriations and becomes more and more powerful?
No, I don't think I saw much change. I think he... Ted always wanted to be one of the boys. He liked being one of the boys, you know, and he admired entrepreneurs, even in the practice. If a guy was starting a business, boy, he was excited for him. I mean, that's, you know, Horatio Alger lives in Ted's mind, and doesn't he in most Americans? Don't want to go there for... I didn't see him that often, so, you know, yeah, we're friends, but over the years, I didn't, you know, I only visited him maybe 3 times in Washington, D.C. No, I don't think so. He knew the power he had, you know, when he was appropriations chairman. He knew he had worked hard to get there. He wanted to be, one time, he wanted to be,
majority
leader, and he told me once that 2 guys reneged on their vote, which disappointed him, but no, he didn't. Ted never wanted to be president, you know. I always admired him in a way. He didn't have a massive ego, personal. He was a guy in the trenches working and moved on up through the system. I guess... if I have a criticism of him when he was drawing, and this is just my bias, but, you know, when he was getting 70-80% of the vote here in Alaska, he could have broken with the party every once in a while, like these, you know, because he was a moderate. He did a lot of things that the right wing would not approve of. I wished he had done more of it. But that's, you know, that's easy for me to say.
Let's talk about politics a little bit then. I know that you, two-party system, Democrat, Republican, people, early on, some people say that Senator Stevens broke with the Republican Party, that there was a Alaska first mentality, not a party first mentality. And that was in his first several years in D.C. Would you agree with that assessment or disagree with that assessment?
I don't have any opinion on that. No, I don't know what he was doing in those early years, but he was Alaska first. I don't remember him breaking with the party particularly.
And then even in-state, a lot of people say and that his success in Washington helped turn a blue state red, using a more modern term. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I suppose. I really don't know. Of course, when I came up here, first it was a Democratic state, and I could see the shift coming. It came in 66 with Hickel. And then, of course, my basic philosophy is that oil money changed the state. I mean, big oil money simply made us a more conservative state, and Ted was, sure, Ted... In the 60s, Ted simply helped change this state to Republican. I mean, literally, I think more than anyone else. He did that. He rebuilt the party. Now, whether his being in ascendance in the Senate helped us stay there, Republican, I don't know. No, I just think it's big oil. Big oil money made the difference.
And talk a little bit about over time. Ted Stevens becomes appropriations chair, works really hard, develops these powerful positions. Did you see, you talked about, you know, you don't have a lot of friends in Congress. We've heard other people say he didn't like, he respected entrepreneurs, and he felt like almost a lot of people in the state, because of his powerful position, would ask him for things. Did it influence how he acted or how he did his job being in that difficult position, because everybody in the state wants your help with their project. You know, everybody in the Senate needs your help to get their appropriations through. And the people you befriend, Bill Allen, are the ones who have made money and been entrepreneurs. I'm trying in my mind to piece this whole thing together in how it creates this smart, hardworking person.
Well, you're asking the ultimate question, yeah. Yeah, well, I think, again, Horatio Alger lives, you know. Ted never sought wealth for himself. I think that's kind of a key. Maybe that's true of a lot of, hate to say it, lawyers, who are lousy businessmen, more or less, because they're, you know, they're not risk takers. They're preventing you from taking risks. So I'm not helping at all here, but
you are.
Well, yeah. Well, his role was simply working within the system back there in Washington, getting money for the state, Denali Commission, 200-mile limit. Title IX, you know, with the women.
Yeah.
He knew a lot about newspapers, of course, and radio. And so, you know, he helped with public
finance. Broadcasting, yeah, significantly.
Yeah, yeah. And so he was, well, from my standpoint, he was, that's where he did his best work. But he was reelected time and time again, wasn't he? Because he was bringing money into this state. And it was just that simple. He, by my standards, and it's easy for me to say, you know, he should have been more a statesman. Mm-hmm. But what the hell?
Well, but I mean, the thing that some people say is he would have these outbursts, that it was almost a dichotomy with the press, that he craved recognition for what he did, but he would be very prickly with the press, and he would occasionally, Michael talks about it, he would occasionally kind of go, well, don't you recognize that I could make $1 million and walk out tomorrow? He never made indications that money was that important to him, but occasionally he would have these prickly things with the press. He would always come back around, and relationships seemed important to him. I mean, does that play into it at all, that at some point he watched all of his staffers become these high-powered lobbyists? And
Could have. He once said to me, you know, I have grandkids too. you know, and yeah, he's half his buddies back there in the Senate are probably millionaires, aren't they, many times. It probably went through his head. I really don't know. But you got me thinking now, I lost track. Your question was...
do you think... I don't think anyone says that Senator Stevens was interested in making money. But there were these kind of blasts on occasion.
Well, the press. Now, that's
the
different.
The press,
that's
okay.
Different. Ted had a thing about McClatchy's, and I don't know where it came from. Oh, well, I kind of do. Evie Ruskin's kid, you know, David Ruskin's reporter, she was probing on Ted, and he just got mad as hell.
Was this the L.A. Times?
Well, it ended up in the L.A. Times. But I think you'll check with this reporter who just kept probing Ted. And, of course, you see, Ted represented Brown, Norman Brown, of the News. And then when the Fannings bought the News, he represented the Fannings, too. And so he had some background there. And then, oh boy, C.K. McClatchy, of course, ran McClatchy. He came up here and built that plant out east of town, and I was involved in that. And I remember Ted talking to McClatchy about some senator from Nevada saying you got to lay off him, and C.K. just stood there, I remember. Ted didn't say a thing. But I'm drifting here, but somehow the McClatchys got into Ted's gut. I don't know why. I'm a little confused on that.
He always thought that over the past probably decade that the ADN and McClatchy were out to get him. Did that shift happen after the Fannings were uninvolved? When do you have any idea when the shift or why the shift happened? I mean, you said you probably don't know why, but I assume that it would happen when the Fannings became less involved.
Oh yeah. Well, Kay was probably Kay was gone by then. Yeah. No. I don't think when Kay was running the paper that if he had a gripe with the ADN, he'd go to Kay. And I don't think that happened. I would know, I think, if that happened. He was helping her, of course, you know, with that merger with the, you know, he passed that legislation, which was to help the news. Mm-hmm. And he always kind of resented the fact that he didn't get the appreciation he may have had, particularly when, of course, the news took over the Times. So right in there, something was going wrong. But this Ruskin reporter kept, and it ended up in the Los Angeles Times.
It was Liz Ruskin, yes, Liz, I remember.
Yeah,
yes.
That it was something right in that area that triggered him. So he really had some bad feelings. But, well, you guys know more about the media than I do, but I don't think he had a feeling bad about the coverage he was getting, maybe. Certainly John Tracy and those guys, he didn't have a thing about them, or I don't think. I don't know.
Well, I mean, let's talk a little bit about Senator Stevens. You know, we have lists and lists of accomplishments, and they're all impressive, but, you know, whether it's ANCSA or the TABS authorization or ANILCA, every major decision in the state since statehood he has been a part of. And yet it seems that over the last 2 years, because of the trial, it has changed some people's perceptions of him, but then people's perceptions sort of changed back when they found out how flawed and biased the Justice Department was in their prosecution. Talk a little bit about his legacy, how you think he'll be remembered, and do you think 10, 15 years from now people will remember the Ted Stevens before the trial, or will it be the Ted Stevens after the trial, or is it somewhere in between?
I really don't think I can help you with that. I mean, I'm just like anybody else. I have no idea how he will be remembered. I mean, that's why I'm interested in your records for historians. I don't think, I really don't. I was surprised when the Native community backed Mark Begich and not Ted. I was surprised when the military vote marked Begich, backed Begich. I mean, I'm confused. Not confused, I don't know what happened. So I don't know how he'll be remembered. I really don't.
How do you think he should be remembered?
Well, I think he should be remembered as a guy who's worked extremely hard, very effectively in the political milieu, the U.S. Senate, the national scene, in getting money for the state, and probably for the natives, the Denali Commission, etc. I mean, that, you know,
I think it's fair to say that Ted's first thought was Alaska. How am I going to, well, I guess every politician does, of course. But that's pretty important, you know, that he was helping Alaska with money. On the land issues, well, I think he was effective because he could go across aisle. You know, he's not an ideologue.
No.
No. And that's big. He's a pragmatist. He deals. One little anecdote might have helped. In 62, for some reason, I drove up with him to Glen Allen. And they were having a boys' state, I think it was called.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it was in that native stone building. It's no longer there, but it's just a giant, big school up there. And I went up there with him. Mike Gravel, who was Speaker of the House at the time, was there. Elmer Rasmussen was there. So they were talking to these young kids that were interested in government. And Mike got up, Gravel got up, I'm paraphrasing obviously, but my recollection, Mike got up and said, you get elected, they give you power, your job is to exercise that power, and that's what politics is about. When you get power, use it. Stevens got up afterwards and said, fine, that's okay, but just remember, sometimes you're in the majority and sometimes you're in the minority. And I think that captured those two guys pretty well. Ted understood the politics of that.
And that underscores the Anilka debate. Actually, that anecdote better than any, I think, underscores the Anilka debate and the differences between Stevens and Mike Gravel. I mean, did you talk to Senator Stevens about the relationship with Gravel at all?
Not really, but I think I said to him once. He went to Hawaii and he wrote a lot. He was writing a novel, I think. And then he lost it on the computer. I said, well, come on, now write a book about all these guys you know. And he said, well, I can't write anything about guys that are still alive except Mike.
Now I'm going to just take a pause here.
Okay, we're back rolling again.
So it seems you get in this position. We've heard other people say, one person we interviewed said it was about you become a U.S. senator and your schedule's laid out for you in the morning. You don't make your own reservations. You don't get your own coffee. You don't make your own breakfast. Senator Stevens clearly, I think that everyone we've talked to said, he is not a crook. And this perception has really impacted his ability to trust people, I think. But, you know, that sometimes you become so insulated because everything is done for you, you don't necessarily see what's going on. How do you feel when people say that? Do you think that's a fair assessment of what happened? You've said he's shown bad judgment in regards to Bill Allen. Do you think that plays into it all? What sort of happened with the indictments and the prosecution?
Two things come to mind. One, he showed me at one time his schedule every 15 minutes, during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he had that. And he liked that. I mean, the more he put on him, the better he liked it. You mean if he got comfortable being the elected official, everybody doing things from people?
I don't know if comfortable is the word that I would use, but just that you do that so long, you don't remember what it's like to not have it done that way. So I guess maybe comfortable is a...
Well, yeah. You're the fourth most powerful guy in the world, probably. You know, after a while, you... And you have, you know, when he was pro tem president, you had two guys around all the time. Yeah. I think he took it for granted. Everybody would. I don't know. I mean, you're talking about what power does to people. Boy, I don't know. Yeah, you take it for granted. Yeah, you get comfortable with your entitlement, and that's a failing. That's a failing. Sure.
Do you think he'd do things any differently if he had the opportunity to do it again?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. He'd... he wouldn't be a friend of Bill Allen's, for damn sure. And, oh, I don't know. I mean, I was going to say he'd spend more time in Girdwood, but that's not fair. He's got kids up here, and he's got kids elsewhere. He probably, well, I don't know. You know, I was going to say he wouldn't work so hard. That's crazy. No. He only had one gear, and it was just full bore, you know. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to think of Alaska without him for those 40 years. I mean, as you're saying, his tracks are everywhere, and people, maybe that it was Sheffield yesterday that talked about, you know, there's an older group of Alaskans who went through this whole experience and can really see what he did, and then there's a younger group that have no idea how we got to where we are, and that Ted was such a substantial actor in all of the things, and as you said, he focused on Alaska, not being a great statesman for the country or a foreign policy specialist. I mean, he, like Bartlett, said, you know, you've got X amount of time, and I'm going to focus it on
sure
what is helpful to Alaska.
Well, I think if you pursue the land, his involvement in these land issues, you're going to get a lot of results. I think he sees it too. I can't remember where I got that idea, but yeah, his relationship with, of course, fish, but land, all those big issues, beginning with statehood, and Anwar, of course. I don't agree with him on Anwar, but you know, commitments were made to him way back with Scoop Jackson and all these guys.
Mm-hmm.
That
Paul Tsongas, yes.
Tsongas, you know, and so that's where Ted mentally is. God damn it, you know, people made commitments to me and they're breaking them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is irrational for me. I mean, it's not irrational. It's just you don't get very far with that modernly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My argument against Anwar—not that you've asked me—but you know, if you open Anwar, you're going to have the Exxons and the BPs going bidding great amounts of money. They should be going in NPRA, right? They're not doing it. And I don't blame them. They're going to go where they think the oil is, but that's not going to help the state, in my view. The long-term future of the state is getting more people exploring in the available acreage that's now available. And Anwar may be drilled someday when the nation needs it. I doubt it. I happen to think there's probably a lot of oil there, but geologists don't agree with that. All geologists don't agree with that. But there probably is. Well, I'm off the subject.
No, that's... Any stories that you would like to... I love the one about the book and Mike Revelle. Any stories that you have, any anecdotes that you think are worth sharing that kind of exemplify... what's interesting, Jack, is you've really helped us with... He lived in a house with 10 people during the Depression, a small house in Indianapolis. Clearly, a grandfather who was raising him, who was blind, having to work at a young age, early in his career, being around Green, you know, the Standard Oil from California's son, and having help, but always having to work and always having to take care of people. Any anecdotes that come to your mind that sort of, you know, are worth telling as we kind of prepare these tapes for the archives?
I don't think I do. I think I go back again to the fact that only recently have I concluded that basically Ted's anger was original.
Mm.
It came from his childhood. I never made that connection until recently. So his temper was real. I mean, he looked out at the world and said, you know, it's a tough world out there, and I'm going to survive. And that's what he's done. And he's enjoyed it. That's the thing about Ted that I've always enjoyed. He really has enjoyed it. I mean, he likes politics. He likes the battle. He likes the fight. And he's smart as hell. I mean, you know, intelligent. Shows up in the law practice. And that's just who he is. And when you add them all up, statehood, ANWR, I mean, you know, ANILCA, Native Claims, whoa, big player in Alaska's modern history. Huge, huge.
You could almost see Alaska in the same relationship to the nation as he was to his family, of having to be a survivor and not being treated well for a long time, and that we were neglected as a state.
Yeah. But one thing in politics, and I don't know if I got this correctly, some politicians personalize their adversaries. He never does that publicly. I know privately, he just blows his top. Well, he blows the top in the sense, you know, after he's dealt with some guy, he'll say that
dirty song.
You know? But it doesn't, I don't think it shows publicly, which is an asset. You see politicians start to personalize, they're going to get in trouble.
Something that strikes me when you say that is, Ann and Catherine, both very different, not again, Stevens is not an ideologue, but he marries Democratic wives who socially very soften, have a much softer stance or a much more liberal stance than Senator Stevens. Does that strike anything to talk about? I mean, it just was interesting to me as you read the history that he is this Republican man who has really changed the state, but both of the people he chooses to marry are more Democrat-leaning than Republican.
Well, of course, Ann was an orphan, as you know. She was incredible. You know, the gag used to be, well, God, it's too bad Ann isn't senator, you know. But, you know, of course, Catherine was a Democrat, but she's a different type, though. Yeah, she's a Democrat, but I don't know enough about her. But she's a pragmatist, too, a lawyer, as you know. So I have to talk about Ann.
You should.
Yeah. You know, really terrific. And the kids are great. I mean, particularly Susan, the oldest, is just like Ann. Just like Ann. Same personality, same soft touch, bright.
I mean, is there anything you'd like to add? I think we've covered a lot of the areas. We're going to try to set up an interview. We're going to talk to Vic Fisher about land claims, and we'll also try to set up an interview with Don Mitchell. We've been playing phone tag because that's an important component.
Oh, yeah.
But you've really helped us, I think, capture a lot of the personality. Is there anything you'd like to add? And I'm sure Paul may have some questions to add, too.
Well, you haven't mentioned a native. Are you going to interview?
We will interview Ori Williams. We're trying to get Julie Kitka. I've talked to Byron Malap, but Byron is trying to think up other people. Byron's not comfortable doing the interview.
Yeah.
But there are SCs. I have a list of about 40.
Willie or something.
Willie, I've talked to. He doesn't seem interested, but I'm going to approach him again.
Interesting.
I'm going to approach Willie again. Tony Knowles doesn't has expressed an interest in not helping.
Well, that raises Tony. It raises a question. Ted always came down or supported Republican candidates, no matter who they were. And he made the difference in Tony's election, I think twice, didn't he? He weighed in
with Lisa.
With Lisa, for sure, and then maybe with Sarah, I think. I think that's too bad. I think I wrote him one time or twice or something, said, stay out of this, because you'll swing the election. So he did each time for the Republican candidate, and I understand it, but I don't blame Tony for being angry, because that's kind of bad. So
it's interesting, too, because they talk about Wally Hickel when he was running in a primary against Jay Hammond, and Hickel having appointed Stevens, and Stevens not wanting to be involved in the race and saying in the primary.
I didn't know that.
Was something that you read a little bit about. And Hickel doesn't want to talk about it, and I'd be interested to see if Senator Stevens does, but apparently some people had requested, Carl Brady had requested Stevens's help with the race for Hickel against Hammond.
I'll be damned. No, I didn't know that. I'd forgotten. That's interesting. No, why he'd do that, I have no idea. That doesn't sound like him.
Well, he stayed out of it.
Yeah.
But because you just don't, rules stipulate you don't endorse a primary candidate fight.
Well, I can understand why Knowles would be angry.
Sure.
It made the difference. And he knew it. No. And I think I tried to interview and say, don't, but it didn't make any difference. I think I came in late anyway.
How did Ann's death change him, or did it?
Oh, boy, I think that's, I don't really know. I just know that, what a loss. Because she was, I assume she was the one that kept, when Ted would go off too far in some direction, she'd say, hey, stop it, slow down, and he'd listen to her. So I don't know. I philosophically, I guess, made all the difference in the world. She was something special. Smart, empathetic, a liberal on the social issues, smart enough to stay away from the stuff he was doing, supporting him. I'm sure that, she didn't tell him how to vote, but she was, important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who knows?
Just thinking back to those times, with Nick Begich just disappearing in the flight, I think how that affected Alaskan politics, and then instead certainly affected the senator, and small aviation has been great for us, but we've lost some great people.
Oh, yeah, Nick Begich, whoa. I mean, you get Don Young for Nick, it's just incredible change. Nick would have been, anything in the House, and a great politician like his son. I just don't know that. Death of Ann, all his friends recognize it was a terrible tragedy.
Devastating.
Oh, yeah. She was great. I did talk to him a couple months ago on his way. I went back east just to take a break, and I did ask him, well, how's he doing? And he did say, well, I feel worse or whatever than ever since Ann died.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I guess what astounds me and is that he was prosecuted during a Republican administration. You'd think that with charges against a U.S. senator, the local guy is not going to act without some deference to Washington, because Attorney General, I think, is going to have to explain this or rationalize it.
Well, my theory is simply that when they caught Bill Allen, you know, with the TV tapes and indicted him, and he confessed, and they made their deal to protect him, his kids, and Vico, Bill Allen just spilled his guts. He just said, I bribed Benny, I bribed Stevens, look what I did in Girdwood. No, I think then the prosecutor had all this stuff from a admitted criminal. They had to do something. Ted did say one thing to me. He said, well, it all started in Juneau, because I asked him about the same thing you asked. Was it coming out of Washington in a Republican? He said, no, it came out of Juneau. So, yeah, it was Bill Allen. Mm-hmm. Bill Allen just, you know, filled the record with all these things he'd done, bribing everybody to protect himself. And you have all this evidence. I'm out of the law for a long time, but I assume that the prosecutor has to do something with it. And so they indict Stevens for failing to report. Technically, they're right, but come on.
The exhaustive resources that are used to get all this information and to look at the home, and you have 7 counts of failure to report.
Yeah.
It.
And then it turns out the prosecutors don't do a good job, and so Ted is no longer convicted, but, well, he paid the ultimate price, didn't he?
He lost his job.
Sure. And I, you know, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. But no, he made a mistake. He let this guy, he relied on this guy, and that was an error.
Did he trust him because of that? You said he admired entrepreneurs. I mean, do you think he saw Bill Allen as an entrepreneur at one point?
Oh, yeah, I think Bill, yeah, sure. The oil companies gave him he was a roustabout on the rig. Some guy from ARCO said, well, hey, we need something done, and he did it, and they gave him a contract, and then they gave him another contract, and, yeah, he was rags to riches. And that's what, I hate to say it, but that's still the American ideal, right? And Ted, always like that. I don't know Bill Allen at all, other than say hello. But there was something about him that Ted kind of liked. He talked about, you know, those horses that they went into. Ted was, you know, all his investments were lousy. But here was another one, sort of a crazy thing. He did say, of course, well, I owned a horse with Larry Carr, as if to say, well, if I was with Larry Carr, I must be okay. Which is probably true, and he let those other guys into the partnership, but hell, that's, you know, what the heck, that's no big deal. But boy, don't get me on Bill Allen, because, you know, he was a successful, the Chamber of Commerce said he was the leading guy in the state. You know, after a while, you start to say, this guy's special. Well, he's special, all right.
Mm-hmm. Special in not so good a way.
Yeah, he started to just bribe legislators. He had must have had fun doing it, too. Crazy.
It wasn't very expensive, either.
No. But let's not, now that this is my bias coming out, of course, let's remember that that's oil money that made Bill Allen. Oil contracts from the multinationals. And he helped them get done what they wanted to get done. And in my view, it's a simple thing. You get big money, in this case, multinational oil corporations, and it sifts into the system and it corrupts it. And Bill Allen was the flag carrier. Boy, you're really getting me going here, but I mean, that's the fact, and it's too bad, and Ted got caught in it because of Bill Allen. He just spilled his guts. You can imagine the interviews that the FBI did with this guy, and he was just telling them everything except maybe some personal stuff. But they caught that too.
Some of the things you read, it's not even rated well for the paper.
That's right. So, you know, it was too bad. And we're all to blame. You know, we let Allen take charge there in Juneau. And a lot of the veterans legislators knew it. Nobody was going to step out and cry foul, except a couple of them, I guess. But that's, I better not go there. That's just part of the system.
Like I said, I'm impressed with it, you know, senators. Accomplishments over the years, you say, really very hardworking and directed to Alaska's betterment. And I hope as we mature and look more reflectively over the last 30, 40 years, that people will begin to appreciate him anew.
Well, that's up to historians. I hope there's a place in the university library somewhere in the system where there's recognition of what he accomplished. Sure, there should be. Yeah, I mean, as far as effective politician, yeah, I put him up there with Egan and Bartlett and Greening and maybe Jay Hammond, I don't know.
Do you remember how the idea for the Denali Commission got started, and how he made obviously the whole commission possible in terms of funding?
I have a vague recollection that some other state had done a similar thing.
Okay.
I think he adopted a format from some other state.
Okay.
But I don't know the background.
Tennessee Valley Authority.
Yep. Was it really?
It was based on the Tennessee Valley Authority, and he started it from a... He started it, and this is why it became controversial, is he put it on an appropriations rider. And there was a debate as to whether it was an appropriate rider or not. And that's how the first, I think it was $150 million, got started. Don Hunter wrote a really nice article on that. I think it was in, was it 95, 97? But he based it on the TVA.
Yeah. I don't know how much good the Denali Commission has done personally. Big money going through it. I assume it's been very effective. I don't know.
You know, the above ground, I can speak only because of my experience working for as a special assistant in environmental conservation. Millions of dollars in above ground storage tanks that need to be replaced, especially in areas like St. Lawrence Island and Shishmaref and Gamble. they had tanks that were degrading, and with global warming and erosion, if those tanks had not been replaced, you were looking at potential fuel spills. I think there's also a lot of money from Denali Commission went into water and sewer projects, and you know, the state has gone from less than 60%, numbers will be a little off, less than 60% of people in rural Alaska having running water to more than 85%. And a lot of that is Denali Commission.
Well, that's big. And there's a limit on the administrative costs, isn't that in the act or something?
That became an issue about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. They were investigated because for the first time the administrative cost had been over 10%. It was always limited at 7%. That was one of the things that Senator Stevens was very harsh about. And, why can't I think of his name? The chief of staff who's now considering a run for public office.
Jeff
Stacer had always worked very hard to make sure that it stayed in that 7% to 8% range.
Yeah. And I know nothing about fish, but I think he'll go down probably in history as, 200-mile limit, and relying on the scientists, right?
Right, right.
That's a big deal.
It is.
I think.
Right.
Yeah.
How did he form, did he talk to you about how he formed cross-aisle alliances? I mean, obviously Jackson and Magnuson and others.
Congressman Dix. From Washington, Nancy, what's the senator from Washington, Nancy, they fought like cats and dogs when they began. I can't think of her name.
Yeah.
But now they work together.
Yeah.
That's a great question, Paul.
Well, he's a friend of Ted Kennedy's.
Yeah.
I was back there on his 80th birthday. Here's Ted Kennedy. So he's not an ideologue. He's a pragmatist. And he knows, I don't know, that's the way the system works, I guess. And maybe he has personal friends, I guess Ted Kennedy and he might just like each other.
Mm-hmm. Like in a way,
Well, in a way it's very practical. I mean, they decided if they stuck together, you get it from him, but if they stick together, they're going to prosper. And they did. I heard in a way out there at the university one time, and he outlined it. They just go together wherever throughout, and they'll get more than their share, and they did. But he liked the guy too. I'm sure he calls him his brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only one in the legislature he felt that close to.
Right.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to add, Jack?
Well, thank you for putting me on tape. Maybe some historian will go back and listen to this and say, hey, he had something to say.
I think that they will.